Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, so Bill Belichick had a very good offseason, an outstanding draft. Had a lot of money to spend in free agency, went out there, spent it wisely. And this team went from a 7-9 team to a 10-7 team. So he gained three wins. And I would ask you guys, if they were to lose this weekend, first round of the wild card, and go 10-8 after a 7-9 season, the offseason he had, is that a bad look for Bill? After the game, we'll be talking about just a bad year from Bill Belichick. Either one of you can talk.
So this is a serious question.
Yeah. Yes, serious question.
Are we doing a bit?
Is it a bad look?
No.
I mean, so is it just as simple as, does he look bad?
There is one caveat to him possibly looking bad, if you will. If the Patriots cannot go to Buffalo tomorrow night and play their best football, if the quote, as I mentioned in the first hour, if the good Patriots, knowing that their playoff lives, that their reputation of the 2021 team, their legacy, not the full franchise legacy, but this team, how they'll be remembered. If the good Patriots can't show up tomorrow night, it's kind of a bad look for Bill Belichick, because that means what'll happen is they'll end up beating themselves along the way to the Buffalo Bills.
That's the
getting
point.
The actual
so you're
W.
Saying there's a chance it could be a bad look for him.
There's a chance that could be a bad look, which means somehow something that has come up head-scratchingly so many times this year. Well, I guess we just got to coach
have
better.
They lost
we weren't prepared. How do you not get prepared for a playoff
game? Have they lost a game this year where you didn't sit there after the game going, what the hell was that?
Yes.
Tampa?
Two games, Tampa and Dallas. They lost. They went toe-to-toe, and those were 15-round decisions.
So the other five, you sat there and said, what the hell was that?
Oh, I mean,
right?
Indianapolis.
No, I would say this.
New Orleans.
When you look at the offseason, if you went
Miami twice.
If Bill went out and handpicked Jimmy G, you know what I mean, and he was healthy all year, and that was the guy you handpicked. You went and got a veteran guy with this team, and you went 10-7, lost in the first round 10-8. You could say, okay, that's probably, you know, as good as it looked, it didn't, 10-8, lost in a wild card. I think the rookie quarterback kind of gives him a pass this year. I think if any you want to talk about, like, Bill, having to win or the pressure to win or whatever, I think that's next year. I think that's after, year two of, like, building a team through free agency, having a very good draft class, and having a rookie quarterback now on year two. Like, next year, I would expect more than 10-8 in a first-round loss in a wild card.
See, I don't know, Lou. I feel like you're giving them a pass.
Yes, I am.
Because of Mac Jones. When there was a time where, I don't know, he may win Rookie of the Year. We'll see what happens. And Bill does nothing but talk about him being the most consistent rookie he's ever had. And he just does everything correct. And he beat out a veteran former MVP, to earn the spot. So I think the answer is, like, yes, it is a bad look. And I don't think you need to be ashamed by saying it. Because just to kind of tag on what you said, if they do lose, it's because of everything that we've been talking about after every loss except those two. And you can really add the Tampa Bay loss in there based on the stupid mistakes and the stupid decisions that were made. You can look at the Dallas game and over 500, like, the most yards ever given up by Bill Belichick coach defense.
Third and 25.
We can list them and list them. So I don't think I don't think we should sit there and all of a sudden, like, well, the first round of the playoffs in a road game in a really cold, crazy, awesome atmosphere. No, the Buffalo Bills are standing on your chest right now. They own the East. You need to go take it back. If you don't take it back right now, I don't know if you'll ever get it.
Well, I'll say this.
So you better win.
And I'll tell you how you get it. Like in 2018 when that Jets player was sitting on Cordarrelle Patterson in the scrum and he reached right up there and grabbed a hold of his you-know-what.
That's
what Saturday night that's what it has to be. You're going to have to reach up and grab the Jets player. If they're sitting on your chest, yeah, they bring a knife.
Bring a
you bring a gun.
Yeah, I think Fitzy, you kind of hit on like, tell me how it looks, right? Because you know, is it a bad look for Bill Belichick to take a rookie quarterback up to Buffalo in a game that the other team is better than? Like, the other team's better than you? Like, you're going up to Buffalo, is that such a bad look if you keep it close and they're just better than you? I don't think it is.
What is wrong with you right now?
I don't think it is.
This is like the expectations have suddenly, I guess.
Well, that's yours. Mine never changed.
Maybe that's true too, but maybe the last 3 out of the last 4 games were so horrendously bad and just, you know, pathetically bad, embarrassing. Like, it's like,
well, that's where it's a bad look. I was going to say, that's where it's a bad look. If they lose this game this weekend because of another block punt or Lawrence Guy's over the center again, you know, or there's 2 or 3 more picks and there's 8 penalties.
Couple false starts,
and
maybe.
False start turnovers, you name it. That's where it's a bad look, because then you start sitting there saying, okay, what? This team looked like it didn't have any coaches. Like, for parts of the year.
But
like, that's a real bad look for him if it ends that way. I think it depends on how it looks.
You're 1,000% right, Lou. And if this game goes down, like, if it's 20-20 with 3 minutes left, and unfortunately that Patriots defense that can't get them the ball back struggles, and they just let Buffalo near field goal range enough, and somehow Bass can kick a 47-yarder at the buzzer.
I don't think that's embarrassing at all.
That's not embarrassing. No. That's not a bad look. You let Buffalo run roughshod over you last year. You came back this year. You split with them. You went toe-to-toe in the playoffs, and you showed them that you're going to be around for a while, and the East is not going to be so easy. If you go up there Saturday night, like Lou just said, you have a special teams miscue. You have 9 penalties. Mac throws 2 more dumb picks. No,
running back
then that's
fumbles,
a bad look.
Or somebody fumbles the football, and, yeah, you look like you looked – the first 5 of the first 6 games in the beginning of the year and 3 of the last 4 games at the end of the year.
Right.
Then you start sitting and saying, okay, for those 10 weeks, you didn't look right. Something was wrong. And then you go into the playoffs. You're like, okay, 11 of 18 weeks, you're making stupid mistakes. And I think Bill is, you know, a good coach. It's sort of like, and I'm always comparing them to like the 21 Red Sox, right? Like, I think Alex Cora is a good coach. That team looked like it was poorly coached. You know, they couldn't catch the ball. The ground balls, the fundamentals, base running. It looked like a bad coach, poorly coached team. And I know Cora is a good manager. He's not Bill. Bill's the best of all time. But if it looks like this again, like we saw recently on Sunday, 11 of 18 games, you know, or 9 of 18, half the season,
it's a bad look, Lou, right?
Well, if you lose like that, it's a real bad look.
Well, how else would you lose then? I mean, because I don't see how else would you lose. Like, that's how they lose. They don't lose, like, you know, gracefully. They lose pathetically.
If the
they
defense
lose embarrassingly.
No, the Tampa game was a graceful defeat. If Nick Folk tried a 56-yard. If anything, maybe Mac Jones could tell you, I shouldn't have had that pass knocked down. Or maybe we should have gone for it, obviously, on 4th and 3.
What about Dallas? How was that loss?
Third and 25 and 567 were bad.
How about this? Think about the last offensive possession that you had. The three or four plays. I'm not even sure if they got a first down. I think it was just 3 plays. You got the ball back first in overtime. And think about the very first throw that Mac Jones threw.
Aguilar had room to run.
Freaking I know. Ball. Game over.
Safety in the heels.
So then they get the ball back, and it's like 2 plays in over.
That was pretty quick.
I mean, it was like, wait a second. I blinked. So
their defense was on the field the whole fourth quarter.
Listen, I'm done with the excuses. Okay,
no, but Christian,
it's
I'm just
an embarrassment.
Saying,
it's pathetic if they lose.
If you
and
lose,
it's a bad look.
If you lose,
where's my horn? Or
because,
it is.
Like you said, you give up a 3rd and 25.
Tough parenting today.
We're talking about the defense. If you lose because you don't go for it on 4th down, you know, and you miss a field goal to lose the game like you did in Tampa. Like, those 2 games are examples where I wouldn't sit there and say, you know, that's an embarrassing bad look loss for Bill. But if it's like the other 5. Losses? Then, yeah, that's a real bad look. Like, that's just a really bad look for him.
I feel like, I mean, most, if this is the conversation and people are saying, no, it's not a bad look, I think that you're just comfortable with where they're at now. So the
I am.
The playoffs are, they're irrelevant. Why even play them? Like, is it what? Just get all these young guys experience? To get Christian Barmore, if he plays, experience?
I said from day one, it's about getting Mac Jones experience. And I think right now that
man... I think
man,
he's past that, though.
I think he is spent is also what he is. I think he is absolutely spent. You know, those concerns we had after talking to him the first 2 or 3 weeks and say he's wound a little bit tight and he needs to relax and enjoy the good times and when you win and just lighten up a little bit. I think mentally he is freaking done. I think he is spent and, you know, can't wait for this offseason to just sort of relax with Sophie, make cookies. I don't know. Learn how to cook.
Don't let her make the cookies. But By the way, did you see this week, though, they got a puppy?
Another one?
They had a puppy. They always had a puppy.
There was like a photo of the two of them looking like totes adorbs with like the little puppy. Like, hey, I hate to, like, no offense, but like, you know what I don't need to be seeing from my quarterback the week he's going to be going to the frozen hellhole of Western New York is like looking totes adorbs with a puppy on
it. It's a multi-poo.
It is. It's a multi-poo.
Is it really?
Yeah.
It's a multi-poo.
Yeah. Get it right.
Yeah.
A multi-poo?
What about him?
Who, the multi-poo?
I'm just saying, because I personally think, no, Mac Jones. Like, I actually think he's spent, like, mentally. I think he's just spent. A lot of that's his own, you know, doing, I believe, because it's just the way he's wound so tightly. What if he goes out and plays like he did the last game he played against Buffalo here in Gillette?
See,
like, what kind of an offseason is that for him around here? Is it one of those, wait, hold on, are we sure? Are we diving back into the draft? Is Garoppolo gone out of San Fran? Like, you know, you start talking about things. We already threw it out there, Russell Wilson. Nobody around here apparently would trade for Russell Wilson, Mac Jones for him.
But I'd cut him.
But if he has a bad game, like, is that good rookie year? Are we looking at it completely different?
I think,
or is it just inexperience?
I would think that, you know, to your last point, to your last reasoning, you use the rookie card. He's a rookie. You are asking too much of him anyways. You are demanding too much. You got caught up in how well he was playing. It was bound to happen. I can't believe it. He waited to the last 4 weeks of the season to show something. And the one game that he played, unbelievable in those 4 weeks, they basically had nobody on their team. They had no offense. They had no defense. They had no coach. They had no nothing. And they got those guys back, if you think about Jacksonville, and they go out and they beat the Indianapolis Colts at home. So I think people will force themselves to be critical of him where they shouldn't at all.
Would there be more people wondering about him, though? Now, right now people think he's like the second-best quarterback in the league. Like, will there be more people wondering if the slide doesn't end? You know how the off seasons are.
100%.
He's got to get one.
100%. I just know human nature too, and I know the passion of the Boston sports fan and New England Patriots fans. Most of them are sold lock, stock, and barrel on the long haul for Mac Jones. But are there going to be people that are going like, I don't know? Like, did you hear that call that went viral the morning I hosted Greg Hill? It was the morning after they lost to Buffalo. This call went viral. Literally was grabbed and played on dozens of other sports radio stations. This guy called up and he's like, he's done. He's got a rag arm. He can't throw in the weather. He doesn't belong in New England. Buffalo, that kid, he's got a rocket arm. We're done. We're screwed. I mean, there are people like that out there, Lou. There really are. So, yes, by just the passion of the Pats fan and the general nature of the New Englander, yes, people will question Mac Jones. Should they? Absolutely not.
Well, I don't know about that. You know, I do think that this is, it's like, is he the guy? You know, we've had that discussion before. I think he's the guy next year. I think he's earned that. I think the way he has played, he's definitely earned that. He's no question the guy. Like, I don't, unless it's somebody like Russell Wilson who's involved, right? Or whatever. But I don't want Garoppolo here. I was on record last year, I didn't want Garoppolo here. A lot of Patriot fans wanted Garoppolo here, but whatever. I didn't want it. But is he the guy? I don't think – I'm not ready to say that quite yet.
I think – you know what he really needs?
Because to me, the guy – the guy isn't like 2-3 years. The guy is, hey, second contract's coming up. That's an absolute no-brainer. And we know what those contracts are. Like, to me, that's the guy. Is he a 10-year quarterback? You know what I mean? Like, is he 3, 4, 5 years? And when you start getting into that final year of his deal, like, what is he? I mean, I think it's way too early to say that. We don't know.
I think that the most important thing for him – to avoid the scrutiny that will come with some of these questions is just to have a clean, no interceptions, no turnover game, win or lose. So I guess the point is it can't be his fault they lose. Like when you look at New Orleans, when you look at Dallas, any of the other losses before these last three losses, the Indy one where he played bad, the Buffalo one in Miami where he played bad, he played bad in all three of them. Even though he came back in the second half of that Indy game, he played really well. 2 touchdowns, and they got a field goal. The defense couldn't hold him. I would say you avoid that. If it's the defense fault not being able to get off the field on third down and fourth down, like what happened in the second game, you won't hear any of that stuff. It'll be manufactured. It'll be fake. It won't be his fault.
I just want to ask one question. I know we're loaded with calls and we're up against the break. But, Lou, I just want to ask this one question. Why is he so good when they're down 17 or 20 points? When he's acting instead, I know they probably soften up the defense.
And when they soften up the defense, what do they give you usually?
The underneath and the over.
And
the
where is he really good?
Passes, the short, underneath short and the over.
Does that
middle,
have
short,
anything to do with these really good numbers late down 17?
Yeah, but Lou, sometimes. But have you seen some of the intermediate to long passes he's done? The Myers to Henry.
I'm not saying he can't play.
He's good at all the. But why? When he acts instinctually, it's all the way back to the preseason. We all saw him in the hurry up or whenever he was like when Josh would give him a chance to go shotgun in the second half after Cam Newton did his thing in the first half. He looked great. Why do they start so predictably every time? Oh, here's Damian Harris off tackle for negative one against
Buffalo. All I'm saying is that I'm not sure yet. I know a lot of people think that he definitely is. If I'm the Patriots, I'm finding out as quick as I can. I'm going out and getting a number one wide receiver, and I'm finding out as soon as I possibly can in this process. I don't want another 2 years with this offense. You know, you go get yourself a real target, see what, just Josh Allen, Steph Diggs. Find out what you have. You know, that's it. Do that as quick as possible. You guys are lined up. Bad look for Bill or Mac if they lose this game. It's dependent on how it looks. 617-779-7937. If the Pats win this game, will we be talking about Mac Jones or is there another player we'll be talking about? We'll do it next.
So we've heard louder crowds here in New England. The weather may have something to do with that.
Well, you know, it's 4 degrees, Greg. You sit on your hands a lot of time.
Fourth and one, and Bill Belichick says go for it. Brady throws it out. Christian Fourier made the catch. First down, New England.
Well, you talk about just making plays, and that's all this is. Hank Williams is all over Christian Fourier.
You know, when you add a guy like Christian Fourier, I mean, he's just got a great feel for the game. I mean, you don't have to tell Christian how to run a route to get open. He knows.
Brady still with the football, throws off inside the 15-yard line to the 14. Fourier, Brady throwing his Fourier. Fourier forced out of bounds inside the 30-yard line to about the 27.
Christian tells me he's open. You know, he's open.
Right.
Christian Fourier just goes and gets the football.
Good old days.
Christian spent all night producing that.
Yes, I did.
I was in studio.
Notes to Ryan, like, cut it this way. Make me sound good.
No. For the record, this is partially correct. Okay? You sent out a text saying, oh, hey, Bill Simmons talking about Foyer in 2003.
That's right.
We should do something. I was like, oh, yeah, you know what? So funny. I just have to have this game opened up on YouTube.
Oh, that here, tab Ryan, just happened to be open?
And timestamps, too, of when I actually made catches.
21-20, big fourth down catch by Foyer.
Yeah.
That's what it says.
Timestamp right there, Twitch.
I love the timestamp.
Holy glory. I remember being in my apartment watching that game on edge the whole time. I'm still stunned. Two things in that game still blow my mind. Beyond how cold it was.
Bethel but I think Johnson's it's relevant. A touchdown pass?
I think it's relevant to tomorrow night, though. No, that happened like one or two other times. How the heck? Like, we don't talk enough about Vinatieri's kick in that game. He kicked a cylinder block. It was 0 degrees, 45 yards. It barely makes it through the upright to give you guys the dub. Drew Bennett, how does he drop that fourth down pass?
See, no, that's that. But
that was
we were
stunning.
Talking yesterday,
stunning
about it, and I was like, yeah, you know, what were you worried about? Like the ball, like you know, just the ball being heavy, hard, just difficult to catch, just based on the fact that it was a rock and it was just going to be stone cold and almost frozen. And you forget about like the kicking game in tomorrow's game. Like if it's going to be a close game. And you have arguably one of the best kickers in the NFL who is money.
The history of the NFL.
The history, really. Is it that good?
Nick Foles?
He's
the greatest kicker of all time.
Oh, okay. You're just saying that because you're
Also the fact that he made
numbers.
Like, I mean, he has. When's the last time he missed from within 50?
No, he's money.
A guy has been money in the bank.
Which makes me feel like he'll be the reason why they lose the game.
Which would be great.
Which
and then you'll
like,
find me hanging.
You will have, who's calling the game? Who's it?
That's
Ian Eagle.
Charles
Who
Davis
the hell is
and
Ian
Eagle
Davis?
Again.
Oh, you don't like Charles Davis? He's money. He's better than Jay Feely.
Well, sure. Yeah. Anytime it's Spiro Dedes or whatever his name was, that guy, the Patriots are guaranteed to play like hot, like white hot garbage whenever it's Spiro Dedes or whatever his name is. But yes, Nick Folk. Advantage Patriots tomorrow night. Bass is still a good kicker, but when it comes down to that, I don't understand how in the hell Vinatieri made that kick. But also, did you guys hear that Diggs apparently went to Josh Allen and said, hey, can you take a little, now that it's getting colder out, can you take a little mustard off the fastball?
Really?
Yeah. Stop throwing it so hard.
Well, that's not
interesting.
Good. I mean, Isn't that interesting? Trying to like not throw it as hard as he normally would.
He throws. You know what he is? He's Billy Koch, to give you a baseball comp.
Like, John Elway.
He's got a hundred. Yeah, he's got John Elway. He's got 100 mile an hour fastball, and that's it.
In the cold weather. Yeah, I don't know if I want to deal with that. You mentioned Advantage Patriots with Nick Folk. The injury front's not so good here. Ryan Hannibal had it. Isaiah Wynn downgraded to out. He didn't make the trip versus the Bills. I guess everybody else did, so including Kyle Dyer. So those guys did travel, but Isaiah Wynn is out. I don't know how you guys feel about this one, you know, with Isaiah Wynn being out and who steps in. I thought it was interesting to hear Phil Perry yesterday. I was at NBC Sports Boston. They were asking, you know, him, like, who do you think takes over at left tackle? And his answer was Justin Herron. And I think a lot of people look at Owenu and sit there and say, well, that's the guy. And he's like, he hasn't played, and I didn't know this, but Phil Perry's like, he hasn't played one snap at left tackle, nor has he ever practiced at left tackle. He's everywhere else on that line except for left tackle. And you believe Justin Herron is that left tackle tomorrow against the Bills. How do you feel about that?
Well, to me, it becomes an indictment on Isaiah Wynn and just how irritating he is and just how he just never available, I feel like, when you need him. Like, that drives me crazy. The Herron situation, I mean, I didn't know that either. Like, my natural thing, just because on Wynn is I feel like he's always the guy on the field, extra lineman. He's playing a lot. He's playing that tight end spot. And I do feel like I've seen him in every single position. I actually just thought it would be a natural fit for him.
Trent Brown hasn't played there at all.
But what if you're doing this?
He's been at right tackle the whole
season. Yeah, you're not going to move him. I always thought that if you have a situation, you wouldn't move two guys to fix one spot.
Right.
Like, you wouldn't move Trent Brown. You would just, if you have a player, and Owenu is like that extra offensive lineman. So he's the guy.
See, yeah.
You know,
so you could see Herron over there, and you could see a lot of Jonnu Smith, no? Like, right next to him?
And can I tell you, and you'll see maybe Owenu coming in for the jumbo package, you'll probably see him giving support to Herron if he's the one who gets the call at left tackle. And I'll tell you exactly what you're going to see. You're going to see a lot of Jakob Johnson blasting to the right side, and it's going to be Yak and Mason and Trent, and they're going to be running student body right, power right all night long.
Like, Owenu is an interesting case, right? Has he been a disappointment?
No.
This year?
No,
he doesn't start anymore. Last year, he was like the highest graded offensive lineman you had, and one of the best ones in Pro Football Focus or whatever, right?
Spoiler alert, he was again this year, too.
Okay, but then Karras beat him out.
Yeah.
And he was like a swing guy. You know, he'd come in jumbo packs, as you mentioned. Like, didn't we just sort of think that after that rookie year, Owenu was like a lock on the offensive line for the next how many years? And he's kind of like the odd man out this year. Yeah, Tyler, what do you got?
By the way, the yards per carry by direction, they actually break these things down. The Patriots going towards the right tackle this season, 2.9 yards per carry. Going to the left tackle, 5.0.
Going to left? It's more, huh?
So, going away from Trent Brown.
So Wynn, really? Good for run blocking, poorly pass blocking.
Bingo. He's back. He's had it. I think Lou, now I know we're getting far down the Pro Football Focus wormhole. I believe a couple weeks ago, Isaiah Wynn was grading out as the third best run blocking left tackle in the NFL. So it is a loss for the Pats going into tomorrow night.
Yeah, no, I think it's a loss, and it'd be interesting to see how they do it. Remember, if it's Herron, I had no idea. I just figured Owenu was the obvious answer.
Same.
No clue. According to like Phil Perry, he hasn't practiced over there once all year. Everywhere else except for left tackle, and he expects Justin Herron to be that in this game here tomorrow night. Let's get to the call. 617-779-7937. We're talking about what a loss would mean for a Mac Jones, for Bill Belichick, and how, if the Patriots win, how do they do it? Let's go to Garrett, who's in Rhode Island. Garrett, go ahead, pal. You're on.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me on, guys.
You got it.
So I was saying, I think that, you know, if this loss happens for the Pats, I think it's more on Mac Jones than on Bill, and I feel that way because in a lot of cases, you can't really tell with a guy how good he's going to be when you're drafting him, how good he's going to be in the cold weather and stuff like that. But on top of that, I think if they lose this game too, you know, even if people don't feel like it's going to fall on Mac, it's going to fall on Mac because Kraft will get rid of Mac before you'll get rid of Bill. And so I think that's the case there. And I'm not personally even a Pats fan. I'm a Giants fan. And so I think I know a thing or two about trying to get out from underneath a quarterback you don't believe in or trust in the playoffs. So that's all I had there. I think it's going to fall on Mac.
All right. Appreciate it. You know, and it's interesting because I don't know where you fall in it, Fitzy. Christian and I have been talking about it. Mac Jones in these three losses in the first half has a 54 completion percentage, no touchdowns, three interceptions, and a 37 quarterback rating.
It's not good.
I do not think that Bill Belichick is going to let Mac fall into that, you know, hole early on. He wants to get it to the fourth quarter, and I don't think they're going to put it on Mac. Like, I think it's defense, punt. I mean, you know, run the ball, punt, try to play some defense, slow down Josh Allen, get this thing tight. Because you can't get in that hole. I mean, he's been atrocious in these three games in the first half.
Okay, what if I told you that
I don't think it's on Mac.
What if I told you, see, I disagree. What if I told you also that your number two cornerback is still, and they're the, and by the way, Buffalo is the healthiest they've been. They'll be trotting out Gabe Davis yep. and Cole Beasley, who didn't show up for the Josh Allen post-Christmas party, where he never made the Buffalo Bills punt a single time. Your number two cornerback is still on the COVID reserve list. Your number three or four just came off of it a couple of days ago. By the way, his lunch was taken from him by the Bills punt returner, who was a healthy scratch the last time he played up there, for 11 catches and a $125. Lou, you can't afford to play the let's just hope Josh Allen makes a mistake all game game. Will he probably give you one? I understand that's the bend but don't break philosophy. How about this? Just don't play into their hands. They're expecting you to run the ball on the first play of the game. Would a little surprise play action, hey, it's the playoffs, we're doing things differently, would that hurt?
You know,
would that be so wrong, Christian?
No, no. And I think the other aspect, I feel like when you look at the first two games, would you say there was a, you know, a very obvious coaching gap between Bill and McDermott? Like the first game was obvious, okay, old vet just really schooling the guy that's trying to be, you know, the up-and-coming respected coach. Would you say there was a huge gap between how each guy coached his team?
With the courage of conviction to stick to the old game plan that he dug up from his dad? Absolutely.
Yep. Okay, and then the second game, advantage who?
Advantage to the general manager of the Bills because they had more talent on the field.
Well, no, see, I think McDermott did an unbelievable job coaching that game. And I feel like, you know.
How do you coach those shuttle, like those?
But you know what I mean. So I do feel like there was this. There was an obvious disrespect card that they were playing, and you heard it in the post-game interview after the first Bills game. And I feel like the way he was able to encourage them, motivate them, just kind of set the table, like what was to be expected of them. And it worked. Like, it worked. Like, usually if a quarterback is chirping after a game, like Josh Allen was chirping, mm-hmm. who did they think we were? You know, beating his chest. Listen,
who did they think I was?
Well, yes,
he was personally playing the disrespect card, and we know for a fact Belichick still has a chapped ass over the fact that Brian Griese said on national TV, December 2020, oh, you know, when we were meeting with Coach Belichick before the game, he said he just didn't buy into the Josh Allen thing. What did he do?
The Josh Allen MVP thing.
Okay,
which is different. Doesn't matter.
Still. That's a disrespect card. So it has been played multiple times now. Now he's gone out twice in Foxborough, mind you, and proved that he can ball out against the greatest defensive mind in modern football history.
I want you guys to hear Chip Kelly, Hall of Famer. You know, obviously great quarterback, the Buffalo Bills. He was on ESPN radio talking about this game and trying to take something from this one.
I look at it as it's a battle of the coaches. I mean, McDermott, some of the things he said after that last game, he didn't want to hear anybody talk about, Belichick. He wanted all about the Bills. And I think there's a little rivalry between them. I love it. I mean, you've got a young quarterback against, you know, Josh Allen. You've got the number one defense in the league on our side. I think it's going to be a battle of the guys up front. I love it. I can't wait to see it.
So when he says a battle of the coaches, it makes me think, remember earlier we were talking about, like, if the Patriots win type of thing, whatever? Uh-huh. Don't you think really that's really what we're going to be talking about like we were after the first game? Sean McDermott?
Yep.
If the Patriots went, Bill Belichick, Sean McDermott, pantsed him again.
Yeah.
The guy lost his ever-loving mind in the sidelines again, screaming and yelling, red-faced. Like, Sean McDermott. Like, the battle of the coaches. I mean, if Jim Kelly really feels like it's the battle of the coaches, how does he feel about his Buffalo Bills in this one?
I think he probably feels pretty good. I do. I feel like we saw the worst side of Sean McDermott in that first game. Frustration. He let his emotions get the better of him. He was outwardly upset and frustrated with the refs, with the way the game was going, with the last two offensive possessions that his offense got, how they just couldn't close out. They couldn't finish. Missing field goals, false starts, Josh Allen almost getting sacked, and then like tripping over his own teammate. And then losing, like, because it's not like they just fumbled the ball and lost 2 yards. Like, in those possessions, they were losing, like, 15 yards. Like, it was really bad.
But I feel like when the stakes rise up on this guy, I think this is going to be interesting, right? Because you got, okay, you lost that game in Buffalo. Everybody talking about how you got embarrassed.
Okay, but he fixed it.
Highly motivated team coming into New England, right? To get back on track, and they whooped them. But when you think about this ball game, like, as far as, like, pressure, we've talked about it before, there's much more pressure on Buffalo. I mean, this team is supposed to, you know, they're one of the favorites to go to the Super Bowl, or them and Kansas City before the season started. It was Josh Allen, MVP candidate, and Sean McDermott. So now that the stakes are high, and if you lose, the disappointment, if Sean McDermott loses this football game, it's going to be an entire offseason talking about him like we did after that loss up in Buffalo, which was not good that week. People talking about frauds. You saying I was duped by Sean McDermott. Like, it's an entire offseason of Sean McDermott winning the division at home. And because of that, does the stress just get to him? Knowing how much is on the line, how important this game is for him and his quarterback, or maybe just him. He doesn't want to hear that again all offseason. That might crack him.
No, I do think that there's something to the pressure on him and the entire franchise just based on what they've been through, like how they, you know, drafted, developed, and really got this team to a real high level of respectability. Their coaches are being sought after, both their coordinators. You know, their quarterback is, you know, considered to be an MVP. You know, they made all the right moves in the offseason. They're their number one defense. I mean, they basically have arrived. You think they have. Mm-hmm. They go to the AFC Championship game last year. They lose to Kansas City, who ends up, you know, obviously they lose to Tampa. But you would think that the next step is to solidify their place in the AFC East. Because I don't think, I think nationally, most people still kind of feel like they're just keeping the seat warm. Like, okay, yeah, you won the AFC East, but you're really not the most important person in the conference. We know who that is. So I do think, like, if I'm them, as far as moving on,
there's a lot at stake for them.
There is, and there's a lot for Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Okay, like, because again, like we were looking at, you know, Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers and not Russell Wilson, but all these coaches that had played in the league that were considered the best to ever do it, you know, like a once in a lifetime type guys, and until they won it, nobody was giving them credit.
That almost sounds like the old Peyton Manning days when it was like
it does.
Belichick yeah. lives in Belichick yeah. owns Manning, and then that 2000.
Yeah, that's right.
First, there was the 2005 regular yeah. season Monday night game when Dwayne Starks was murdered right yeah. there in front by Reggie Wayne and by Marvin Rice. Harrison, and then
06
I think that is it.
I think there is a lot of similarities
yep.
with the way you viewed the Colts,
right?
Just the way you viewed the Colts, and like, yeah, they're great, and yeah, they have the best regular season quarterback in the history of the NFL,
mm-hmm.
but you can't get past the Patriots. And then what was the other thing with Manning outside of that dome in cold weather? I remember waking up. And everybody thinking that the weather was going to be nice, I think it was 03 or 04, right? No, yeah, it was right after the Tennessee game. And then waking up, and there was, like, snow flurries, and it was wet, and it was sticky, and it was gross. And we all knew as we were driving down, leaving the hotel, getting to our cars, we're going to win this game because Manning couldn't play in the snow.
Yeah, meanwhile, you got a Buffalo quarterback in Buffalo.
Huh.
Who can't play in the
Who is used to playing outside.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the calls before we get. Mike Lombardi, by the way, is going to join us at 4 o'clock. Let's go to Matt in Rhode Island. Matt, what's going on, buddy? You're on with Lou, Christian, and Fitzy.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Two obvious keys, I think, is Judon with his pass rush. And what I mean by that is I think it's more important to contain Josh Allen. You know, his pass rush has been going like 5-7 yards like behind the QB. I don't know if that's working. So maybe on the contained side of that. And then with Mac Jones, you know, all this has been made about Josh Allen not being able to play in the cold. But let's be realistic. I mean, Mac's never seen these conditions. I hope that fumbled snap with the center exchange is in his head. So I'd just like to see some wrinkles in the offense to try to throw Buffalo's defense off. You know, that's all.
Yeah, appreciate it, Matt. Thanks for the call. You know, it is funny. So much attention on Josh Allen and what he can and can't do in the cold weather. I am really interested to see Mac Jones in the really, really cold weather. Like, I don't think that first game, that was wind. Like, wind is a completely different animal. Just cold weather. The guy's never played in it either.
I don't like that.
No, he doesn't like that. He's too cold. Before you break, yeah,
I have a question for both of you.
Talk to me.
Who do you think the defensive equivalent to Mac Jones is? That's all I'm doing.
The New England Patriots.
That's it. Who do you think, because I think we need to have a discussion about this first.
We'll do it next. Mike Lombardi joins us at 4. We'll also dive into Mike Lombardi, getting himself a little bit of hot water. on his podcast, and then trying to walk it back a little bit. We'll get into that next. Lombardi joins us at 4 o'clock. It's Maloney, Fourier, and Fitzy here on a Friday.
All right, so I asked you guys before the break, okay, who is the defensive version or defensive equivalent of Mac Jones, okay, based on where Mac Jones is, new to the team, the way his season has been? Who do you think it would be? I mean, it's a broad question. I get it, but play along.
Okay, he's not a rookie.
Okay.
He's known as the dude with the red sleeves.
Yep, Matthew Judon.
Matthew Judon.
Matthew Judon.
So when you say version of Mac Jones, you mean a guy that kind of fell apart a little bit down the stretch.
Then
it's definitely Judon. Yeah,
no, yeah, unbelievably.
How about face of the earth?
Yeah.
Disappear. No, yeah. I mean, okay, we can talk about Mac Jones.
Did you say liability at times?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes. The same is Mac. Okay, Mac fumbles the snap. He throws an interception. So what's worse, Matthew Judon on a very important 3rd and 8 or 4th and 2, whatever. Like, you look at the last game against Miami, twice, 3rd and 6 and 3rd and 8, overrunning the quarterback and allowing an easy, you know, scrambling lane for a first down. Like, what is worse?
Especially with Josh Allen.
Yes.
You can't do that with this guy.
You don't think they've been practicing that? Like, he needs to get right.
Corral and contain Lou. I will say, one, Matt Judon is held on roughly 100% of all plays, or at least 100%. A significant portion of them. I mean, the guy gets held a lot. I mean, even he was tweeting about it this week. He was tweeting out something, basketball post-game interview where somebody on the Kings was saying, like, it's ridiculous, it's got to stop, it's happening all the damn time. Like, he's aware of it. He's trying to plead his case that he's getting held all the time and he's not getting the call, which I'm not sure if that's going to help so much. And as to Judon's input, here's another one of these stats. I gave you those stats earlier, Lou. Patriots, you know, 8-0 8-0 when they don't lose the turnover battle.
Yep.
And 8-1 when they score in the first quarter. Matt Judon has not recorded a sack since, you guessed it, Lou, week 13 up in Buffalo. Matt Judon, when they get a sack, they are 8-2. When he gets a sack, it makes that much of a difference. It's like the equivalent to, like, only 25% of drives where there's a holding call on the offense lead to points. That's how pivotal holding calls are. Judon making a difference makes a massive difference.
And I think if you word it that way, the guy struggled down the stretch. I think it's definitely Judon. I thought going into it, you were kind of looking at Mac Jones' importance of playing well and think, which defensive player needs to play well. And I guarantee,
I hadn't really thought it out.
Well, I'm just saying, I understand that Judon has to play at a high level, but I look at your best players, and Judon might be one of them. I look at J.C. Jackson, can't drop interceptions. You know, Devin McCourty can't drop interceptions. Look at the secondary. Can't drop interceptions.
Nope.
Like, you said he's going to give them to you. If he's going to give you...
You're going to have an opportunity.
If he's going to give you 3 opportunities and you actually only hold on to one of them, and you know what I mean? Like, that can't happen. Like, that Devin McCourty interception before the Brandon Bolden unnecessary roughness that was made up. Like, Devin McCourty had it right in his hands, down 14-0. You get that ball, maybe you come right back and you turn into a 14-7 game against Miami. That stuff can't happen. Like, your secondary, if it's one of your strengths, can't be dropping opportunities to get interceptions and flip the field.
Yeah, and I agree with you, and I think Judon definitely needs to – he doesn't need to necessarily get a sacked. He just needs to make impact plays. Whether he flushes the quarterback out and somebody else gets it. I mean, he could not show up on the stat sheet at all and still have one of his best games of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And now you talk about interceptions. So I feel like interceptions and turnovers are so important in this game. It makes me feel like, you know, when you're watching games and you know this, you feel it, and then you see the ball and the guy drops it and you're like, oh, my God, we just missed an unbelievable opportunity.
All right, listen, I got to get to this quick. It's talking to Mike Lombardi at 4 o'clock. Mike Lombardi in the GM Shuffle in this podcast, he said some things that later on he tried to pull back and say that he misspoke and they were my words, not Brian Flores' words. This is the original sound that he played, but I just want you to keep in mind what he's saying afterwards. But I want you to listen to Mike Lombardi talking about this relationship between Flores and Tua.
The Miami question for me is, which I think they're going to find out if people are honest in the interview, right? If you're really honest, are you going to sit there and say, I can build a team around Tua? Because that's what Ross wants to hear. That's what Brian Flores wouldn't say. I mean, we've seen all the conversations that Flores basically was, you know, had with Tua, where Flores told Tua at halftime of the Tennessee game, this has all been reported. I mean, look, I don't think Flores was shy about telling him, hey, I should have picked Mac Jones. I mean, I don't think he was shy about telling him that. In fact, I know that he wasn't. Hmm. You know, I remember I said there was commentary between the head coach and Tua during the season, and I wouldn't reveal what the conversation was. Well, the conversation was, hey, if I'd have knew you're going to be this bad, I'd have picked Tua. Ooh. I would have picked Mac Jones. Ooh. That's the conversation.
So you heard that stuff. Like, you know, that's not a conversation I think. That's a conversation I know. And these conversations I never told you before. Well, I'll tell you what those conversations were. And then he told you what they were. And then that got a lot of run. Like, people tweeting left and right. Flores told Tua that he should have picked Mac Jones. Everyone's tweeting it. Everyone's picking it up. And then Lombardi came back and said, I misspoke on the podcast. Those were my words for Flores, not his. And I wanted to tell you that ahead of time because I wanted you to listen to it. And you tell me, when you hear what Lombardi and how he said it.
I mean, I don't think he was shy about telling him that. In fact, I know that he wasn't.
Like to me, this is damage control because I think he told exactly what happened, like exactly the conversation. And now he's sort of like, those aren't my words. Those aren't Flores' words. Those are mine. It's like, man, it sounded like it was in the know that it came right from Flores.
So is the question, do we think that Lombardi called Tua into his office and said, dude.
Flores,
I really wish I would have picked Mac Jones. Even though this, you know, I've never heard a conversation like that.
If I knew you were this bad, I would have picked Mac Jones.
Yeah, if I knew you were this bad, like, do I think maybe.
The following year, you would have went back into the draft and drafted the kid again?
I mean, I've never, you need him. Even if you don't believe it, you need him to think that he's the one you want. Like, you need to let him believe it. Unless there was just this unbelievable disrespect and they each just hated each other. Neither one was holding their
tongue. My thing is, like, you know, guys that have a lot of information and a guy gets fired and the organization separate and they're like, okay, now I'm going to spew this information that I have. Right? A lot of this inside stuff that I know about, now that he's gone, I feel free to talk about it. Unfortunately, he said so much to the point where, like, Flores might have reached out and said, hey, dude, what are you doing? You're killing me. Like, what are you doing? Like, I don't need to answer any more questions.
I remember I said there was commentary between the head coach and Tua during the season, and I wouldn't reveal what the conversation was. Well, the conversation was, hey, if I'd have knew you were going to be this bad, I'd have picked Tua. I would have picked Mac Jones. That's the conversation.
So now the Flores is gone. He feels like he can reveal the conversation. Somebody must have got to him. Like, you better clean that up. Like, I'm up for jobs right now. I don't want him to go in addressing your quotes. Because that sounds like Mike Lombardi knew about. Yeah. It wasn't his words. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He didn't sound like.
I feel like this is. I don't believe that Brian Flores went unless they just hate each other and they were both trying to be disrespectful and hurtful, right? Because that's what you do with somebody like I'm gonna hit you below the belt. Listen, I should have married Fitzy. He's the perfect person. He's so nice to me. He's so mean. That would never happen, by the way. But I feel like that's what you would do. Like, right? I mean, have you ever heard?
Who would ever tell their quarterback?
Ever. Ever. Ever.
Is that his way of just motivating him?
No, I would think it would be.
I need more out of you, and if you were this bad, I would have just drafted your boy Mac.
Or how
younger
about,
than you.
Or how about this door?
Told me you were bad in the beginning.
I never should have married your father.
Yeah,
I only had that thrown at me.
Well,
a long time.
Like, it's one of the reasons why, you know, when you talk about Brian Flores no longer in Miami, it's like relationships, and he's not exactly the best people person. He doesn't exactly address the media, and he doesn't know how to talk. And he's got four different offensive coordinators in 3 years. And one of his best friends is a defensive coordinator who quit after a year. Like maybe he just.
Maybe he's tough to work for.
Yeah, maybe he gets after it,
and
boy.
Maybe he's still pissed off that they took Tua over Herbert.
All right, you know what? Let's ask Mike Lombardi about these comments. Maybe he'll want to clarify them right here. We'll talk to Mike. That's next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.